X-Ray, and I want to introduce a couple of very special guests we have here to talk about basic income and International Basic Income Week. You can learn all about it right now by listening to X-Ray. We've got Katrina, radio producer here at X-Ray and activist in Oregon, and Professor Weiderquist here to talk about basic income. And Katrina, I'm going to kick it to you. Can you tell us a little bit about what we're chatting about this morning?
Yes, thanks so much for having me here, Chase. I really appreciate it. So I am here to inform listeners that this week until the 21st is the 18th International Basic Income Week, a time dedicated to exploring and raising awareness of the potentials of implementing a universal basic income, or UBI, to address wealth inequality and quality of life. If you go to basicincomeweek.org, you can find a calendar of events, and you'll see events all over the world with activists and groups participating with this special week. Many of them are in person, but there are also some virtual, and there's some really interesting events such as learning from pilot programs here in the U.S., so you can hear the results of UBI actually being practiced. But for people who don't, who aren't really familiar with this concept, Professor Weiderquist, who is a renowned economist, is here with me and Chase to explain more. Thank you so much for being with us today, Professor Weiderquist. Would you mind giving listeners a brief intro to you and your work and how long you've been working on UBI?
Now, my name is Carl Weiderquist, and I grew up in Cassopolis, Michigan. I got a PhD in economics at the City University of New York in 1996, and I've been interested in basic income and similar policies since I was a teenager, back in the 80s. But I really started working at it just shortly after I finished my PhD in economics. And I've been writing about it ever since. So since the very late 20th century. But I'm not most known as an economist. After working on issues like this, I realized that although I'm interested in economics, I'm really interested in the ethics and the normative issues behind economics, the political economy and the political philosophy. So I actually went back to grad school, got another PhD this time at Oxford, in normative political theory. And I was already well involved with the basic income movement at this time. I finished that in 2007, worked in the UK for a couple of years, and I've been working at Georgetown University's campus in the Middle East in Qatar since 2009. And I've published a lot of books and I think about 7 income. Nothing's completely unrelated.
Okay. So for people who aren't really familiar with UBI or basic income, can you give us a basic description of what basic income is?
Sure. Basic income is the idea of putting a floor under everyone's income so that your income goes to zero. Income doesn't have to start at zero. We don't have to be such a cruel society that you do that if things go wrong for you, you find out with absolutely nothing coming in and you can't buy anything. And we have a basic income that's just a modest, basic level, but hopefully it's large enough for you to live on. This makes for a kinder society, a society that more concerned with the freedom of the disadvantaged and stop putting barriers for people to get their most, to satisfy their most basic. Well, then whatever taxes you pay that sort of end up taking it back as you make more money, these are structured so that you're always better off making more money privately than you would be. You get there's no sort of a welfare cliff that we have now where you get a substantial amount of money if you have nothing or below a certain threshold, but if you earn above the threshold, suddenly it's all gone and you're actually worse off than if you hadn't worked at all. There's nothing like that. If your income goes up, your private income goes up, even though some taxes come out, your after-tax income is always going up. And that's a feature that's really sadly missing from our system right now.
So, Professor Weiderquist, you were cutting in and out quite a bit. We're wondering if you can turn off your camera so it might be, you know, so it doesn't take as sure. much power. So I'm getting that this is just a basic income for anyone. It doesn't really matter, you know, who you are, what your status in life is. It's basically just a, you know, a basic, well, basic income. So it's
It's usually put forward as a universal income for everyone. It's a relatively small level, but you get it rich or poor. The poor, of course, are going to benefit from it a lot more than the rich will. The rich will, in fact, their taxes are going to go up more than they get in their basic income. But like Social Security, no matter how much you pay in taxes, you still get your basic income direct deposit every week.
Okay. So, you know, we've seen pilot programs go on across the U.S., mostly in like cities, you know, smaller levels, but then we see people like Andrew Yang, you know, he ran on it, as a presidential candidate. So that's coming from the federal level. You know, I've seen clips where President Obama was in favor of a UBI. So in your professional opinion, would you say that basic income is more, is best implemented on the local level or the federal level, you know, government wise? You know, I don't know if there is a difference, but what would you say in your professional opinion?
Oh, yeah, definitely it's much better on the federal level. The federal government controls the currency and controls the borders, whereas if you have it on the local level, then you can create an incentive for people to move across across the state line or the city limits in order to get the basic income or to avoid some of the taxes for basic income. If you are going to do it the local level, the way to do it is to finance it by local tax, to tie it to things like local land value taxes or natural resource taxes, or real estate taxes. Alaska has a local basic income. It's very small, so it's not enough that's really going to attract a lot of inward movement to Alaska. You have to wait a year and a half after you get there before you're eligible, and then you're going to get a basic income that's not enough to pay for your flight up to Alaska, much less your relocating costs. So Alaska has some advantages there, but it has a basic income that's made up, that's taken up out of a fund that they've created out of a small saving that they've accumulated from the enormous oil resources that they've gained over the last 40 or 50 years. It would have been, if they'd have put more money into that fund, Alaska could have a really good basic income now. But the one they have now is a significant one. It's just not enough to live on.
How much is that, out of curiosity?
It varies. It's based on the performance of the fund over the last few years. So it goes up and down every year. It's been over $3,000. It's been in recent years. It's been as low as around a little over $1,000. So it goes up and down. When you think about getting $1,000 or $2,000 for a family of five, that's a lot of money if you're on the margins. You suddenly get a your family of five living on the margins, suddenly you get a once a year check for $10,000. That's going to make a big difference.
For sure. Yeah. And if listeners are interested in learning more about these, you know, smaller basic income programs, I know on the calendar of events for basicincomeweek.org, there's a virtual event, with results from a pilot program in Minnesota. So, you know, that's a way to learn a little bit more about it. So, Professor Weiderquist, I'm kind of curious, you know, I don't know. I'm a logistical person and I've always loved the idea of a basic income. And I'm just kind of curious, you know, if we want to implement a sustainable UBI, what are some important components we can look at? You know, I guess from the federal level, I hear what you're saying, you know, tying it to natural resource income coming in. What are some other ways that we can start thinking about this in a realistic way? Like, okay, this can be done.
Well, over the last 40 years, the United States economy has doubled in size per capita. Our per capita income on average has doubled. Yet almost all of the gains from that doubling has gone to the richest 1 or 2%. And so that means we could tax the top 1%, we could tax them at a rate of that, and we could accumulate half of GDP by taxing them. And that would leave them no worse off than rich people were in the 1980s. Well, I remember the 1980s, and rich people were plenty rich in the 1980s. They had their private jets and their helicopters and their yachts. They can still have all that kind of stuff, and they can afford to pay a lot of taxes. So making it sustainable is not really that difficult. It is the political will. We have a system where the donor class controls both parties to different extents and for different reasons, wanting different things from both parties. But there's a lot of overlap. And one thing that the donor class of both parties wants is a lot of low taxes on the rich at the same time that they have a lot of giveaways to the rich. The government buying things that the private sector wants to sell to the government. We buy private prisons. We buy our pennies, our dollar bills from private companies because they spend a lot of these bribes we call campaign contributions around Washington. We get rid of a lot of these giveaways to wealthy corporations. And yeah, there's plenty of money to sustain a basic income.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with you. So, you know, you are interviewed quite frequently. You know, you do a lot of speaking events from what I've seen, you know, from your website and just, you know, looking around. From the time you started to now, have you seen any societal shifts that lead you to believe that, you know, this could become a reality, you know, implementing a universal basic income? I mean, at least in the United States. I mean, plenty other countries are very interested, and I feel like they might even be able to implement it sooner. But in your opinion, could you see that this happening? I mean, based on what you're seeing in society and based on your interactions with people?
Yes. I mean, times are really difficult right now. The biggest threat to progressive movements like this is nationalism, conservative nationalism, where they try to say, the problem is not bad distribution, the problem is not your own government's policies, the problem is foreigners or immigrants or people who are different from you in some way, such as by race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, and so on. This kind of movement is very strong in the United States and around the world right now. And they're using that as an excuse to cut policies that are helping people, saying, "Oh, we're going to help you by getting rid of these bad people." That's not these so-called bad people. Getting rid of foreigners is not going to anyway help American working class. So they're attacking what welfare system we have right now. However, this isn't going to last forever. You see movements among people that we need a new model for a more caring society. And when power shifts again, people are not going to want to rebuild Lyndon Johnson's welfare system. They're going to want to build something new and something that works better. And UBI is a well thought out alternative that is ready to be there when that happens. So yeah, I think things in the long run are moving in our direction.
Okay, so if listeners are hearing this and they're inspired by the idea of universal basic income, what would you suggest you know, what steps can they take to become active in this? Because we really need people working on this and advocating for it to, you know, for it to actually become a reality. So what do you suggest to listeners, you know, either on the local level or, you know, federal activism? What are your suggestions?
Yeah. Well, internationally, go to basicincome.org, become a member. That's the international group. Become a member that's the Basic Income Earth Network at basicincome.org. Become a member, join, see what you can do to help out for the international group. Then if you're an American, there are two groups that are important to volunteer for. The U.S. Basic Income Guarantee Network, which is online at usbig.net. And there is Income Movement. Which look up Income Movement. I think it's incomemovement.org is their website. They're the more activist organization. They organize our Basic Income Week stuff in the United States, and they put on a conference every year, which US Big helps out with as well. All three of those organizations are good organizations to get you started. And of course, I always tell people to look at my website. If you can spell my name, you can find my website. It's whiterquist.com. So if you can spell Weiderquist, you can find my website. Just Google Carl Weiderquist. Hopefully a close spelling will get you there.
Okay. Chase, do you have any questions for Professor Weiderquist before we end?
Maybe. I think I might. I want to thank you for joining us. I really appreciate what you have to share. And I think it's worth talking about in terms of the ethics of the economy, and I appreciate you sharing your views on those. I think it's really important to kind of call out that the oligarchical and corporatist ruling classes of the world and the United States particularly are using wedge issues, for lack of a better term, to kind of divide us and keep us from tackling things that would make our lives better. So I want to thank you for sharing that and calling that out. Do you view this as a kind of supplement to other welfare programs, or is this like a replacement in your mind to other welfare programs to make economics more ethical? I guess that's kind of my first question. I do have a follow-up, but I'd kind of like to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. It could be a supplement to some and a replacement for others. But what people look out for is people trying to pigeonhole you down a road. They say, you want this program, that means you want to cut all the other programs. No, that doesn't mean that, and nor does it mean that we have to. Basic income is not about shuffling around the money that we're using to support disadvantaged people right now. It is about a much greater commitment to help disadvantaged people and systematic disadvantage in the economy. Well, basic income is not the only thing that creates lack of income is not the only thing that creates disadvantage. There's a lot of other things you've got to do. It's going to help kids in education, but it's, and there's studies that show it greatly helps kids in education when their parents aren't so poor. But it's not going to fix, that alone is not going to fix the schools. We need more funding for schools. Programs for the disabled can't be entirely replaced by this. Programs for the elderly can't be replaced by it. In some areas, housing assistance cannot be replaced by basic income. So there's a lot of other things that we need. What we really need to have a good society is one that has a much greater commitment to fighting disadvantage and looking for what systematic disadvantages are, and they almost all have a big economic component, and basic income can help with that economic component, but it doesn't replace everything.
Right. Yeah, I'm hearing more about a shifting of values, really, and how those are prioritized. Then my other question was, you know, we talked a little about Alaska. Katrina, you mentioned something maybe about Minnesota. Like, where are there places, or are there places where this has been implemented? How is it working there? And I'm kind of wondering, too, like, it seems like you brought up the opposition to basic income or ideas like this is often maybe a bad faith argument. We talked about wedge issues, right? And kind of people kind of helping us to turn against each other. Are there technical arguments that people have that are against it? Or, you know, I kind of want to be objective and play devil's advocate for a second. Are there real objections to it outside of what you kind of identified as nationalism earlier?
Yeah, well, I mean, the biggest objection to it is the question of how much are people going to work if you have this? If it is possible to live without working, then will people actually work? And what I view that as the responsibility of employers. What it means to be an employer is that you've got something you want done and you don't want to do it yourself. You want to pay somebody else to do it. Well, you got to pay that person enough so they'll want to do it. If I'm getting a basic income of $12,000 or $15,000 or even $20,000 a year, that's not enough to live real well. We live in an economy. You're not going to buy a lot of luxuries on it. We live in an economy where we produce far more than that for everyone. If you want somebody to do some work, offer them $50,000 a year, which is a lot more attractive than living off $15,000 or $20,000 a year. So what it ends up doing then is that this fear that people have about, well, what if people don't work? Well, if people don't work, wages go up. Wages going up is good for everybody who works for a living. The worst thing you can do for a worker is put them in a position where they have no other choice but to work. You want to help workers and laborers, you got to give them an opportunity to say no to the people who are offering bad jobs. That's what we're most lacking in this economy, because there's a fear that no one will work, but they will if you give them the right incentive. And we've given the wrong incentive for employers to pay these wages. We're too concerned about what's the incentive of the worker to work. Well, what's the incentive for the employer to pay good wages, to have good work hours, good working conditions, and to share the benefits of growth with their employees? Well, that incentive has to be from workers will quit if you don't. But we're making it so hard for workers to quit that we've hurt the whole middle class by doing that. The middle class has been losing ground for more than 50 years because it's been harder and harder to quit bad jobs. So we got to get over this fear.
Yeah, and to follow up on that, one might even make the argument that if you're a small business, this could be looked at as a subsidiary to help you hire people in some ways. If you are having a hard time paying higher wages, but you still need people to help out with your business, I would argue that there might even be a benefit to the middle class employers of the world who are just trying to also make it by with their small businesses. But that's my own aside.
Yeah, I would say if you got a job that people want to do, UBI is a supplement for that job. If you got a job that people can't stand doing, then maybe you should reassess who you are as an employer, how much you're paying, and what kind of work you're making people do.
Yeah, certainly. Well, thanks so much for answering my questions and joining us this morning, Katrina. I'm gonna let you take over from here, but thanks for chatting with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, it's always a pleasure to connect with Chase and Professor Weidequist. I really appreciate your generosity. You seem to be very open and, you know, willing to talk to anyone who wants to talk to you. Listeners, if you're interested in hearing more about universal basic income, you know, this besides the you know, the websites that Professor Weidequist has recommended and basicincomeweek.org. First Friday on X-Ray at 1 p.m., there will be an episode of Red Light Exposé, which will explore universal basic income with Professor Weidequist and a colleague of his, Professor Stacia West, who studies, who also is an expert in women's studies. So it will be a really interesting episode exploring how basic income can help women who are in domestic abuse situations and, you know, some of the desperate situations that might lead them in really bad situations. So if you're interested in hearing more, that will be October 1st Friday here on X-Ray at 1 p.m. I have nothing else to say. Just thank you so much, Chase. Thank you, Professor Weidequist. And everyone go check out basicincomeweek.org. And let's make this – oh, I do want to say one more thing. I want to say that, you know, we have to be bold in – making this society what we want it to be. You know, we see people who are against community, against good values, and they are so bold. They'll do whatever they want, you know, so we have to be just as bold. It's not about breaking the rules, but adjusting the rules so that this world we live in is more livable. So I just wanted to say that we need everyone on board, and let's be bold, and let's go for what we ask for, what we want. You know, we make the rules, really. And so let's make this the world that we want it to be. So that's all I have to say.
If I can add to what you brought up, something about women and marriage, I can say what, just as there are workers who are stuck in bad jobs, there are women who are stuck in, women and children stuck in bad marriages where the father is abusing the wife or the children, and the woman does not leave because she'll be on the street if she does. This happens a lot. Basic income, as it gives you the power to say no to a bad job, it also gives you the power to say no to a marriage that you're staying at just because of financial dependence, even if it's abusive. That's the kind of freedom that people need.
Yeah, I come into contact with people in that situation almost every day. So yes. So thank you so much. I'm really excited for people to hopefully get inspired by this idea, and let's, you know, work towards something like this. So thank you both again, and hope you have a wonderful week.
Great talking to you both.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, I want to thank both Katrina and Professor Weiderquist for joining us today on the show to talk about universal basic income, Basic Income Week, and their advocacy. Always interesting to talk to people who want to change the world around us and their visions to do so. If you want to learn more, you can go to basicincomeweek.org and see the calendar of events. All right, you're listening to X-Ray FM. The Tom Hartman program is coming up in just about 20 minutes. We've got Expansions here with Lonnie Liston-Smith.